It's a Thursday. What time is it? This time. He's become kind of the James Brown of Portland media, hardest working man in showbiz. Like a throwback player who plays offense, defense, and kicks field goals. Doing it for NBC Sports Northwest. He's got the new show with Bree Amarantha, Serena Winters, The Bridge, Rip City Radio with Dwight James. I think I might have seen him win a bronze medal in Pyeongchang. Follow on Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing?
Man, you exhaust me every time you say all that stuff.
Yeah, it used to be I could say it in one breath. Now I have to breathe. So, how's that whole radioing thing coming along?
What?
Radioing.
Oh, radioing. Yeah, I made that up last week, huh? Radioing.
I like
radioing
it.
Is hard. Radioing is fun, man. We had David Aldridge on today. That was cool. We're going to have Jim McMahon on tomorrow.
Oh, you must be out of your mind. Are you going to sing the Super Bowl Shuffle?
I'm going to see if they'll sing it with me. I'll sing Walter Payton's part. That's going to be cool. But no, it's fun, man. The only day that was bad is like yesterday when I had radio and then Talking Ducks and then The Bridge. That was a hassle. But.
First of all, I've got to say, I mean, as far as sports journalists go from, I don't know, any generation, you don't get better than David Aldridge. I mean, I don't want you to repeat the whole interview, but I love that guy. I've long been an admirer of his. What were some of the highlights? What'd you talk about?
Yeah, we talked about the Western Conference and how stacked up it is and how much of a circus it is. And, he basically said what is pretty obvious, that it's going to come down to all these injuries. You know, when does Kawhi come back? Is he going to be 100%? Is Jimmy Butler going to be back? You know, is Portland going to avoid injuries? The Thunder lost Roberson, their best perimeter defender. Are they going to be the same without him? They're obviously not lately. He broke that down. We asked about Cleveland. He agreed with me that Cleveland's probably going to win the East, but he wouldn't bank on it. You know, he wouldn't bet on it, I should say. And he does believe that LeBron is headed to Houston, not L.A. He thinks that is the most logical spot for him to land because he doesn't believe that LeBron's going to believe he can win in L.A., even with George. He thinks it would be better for him to go to play with his BFF in Houston. And what I think might happen if LeBron goes to Houston with Harden and Paul, I'm willing to bet that Carmelo would go there for cheap.
Whoa.
I think Carmelo would say, you know what? I'm at the end of my career. I'm no longer a max-out player. Why don't I just go to Houston for $4 or $5 million and try to win a title with my best friend?
Well, I tell you what, if that all happens, I'm going to take night classes, and I'm not even going to pay attention until the West Finals and when Golden State plays Houston.
Exactly.
Whoa. Talking with Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. As far as the Blazers, a lot of talk, Lillard had the most productive month in franchise history. Is this their best team since the Aldridge era? But, that swing from 3 through 9 is like 4 games. Portland's kind of in the middle. Is everybody just playing for the right to lose to Houston and Golden State in the West semis, or is there really any hope behind winning a round or two?
Yeah, I kind of think so. I think San Antonio with Kawhi, if he gets back into form, they could be a threat to Houston. I don't buy them as a threat to Golden State, although they did play well. I mean, people point to last year's game one against Golden State when they were winning until Kawhi got injured. But, leading in game one does not a series win make, right?
Yeah.
Kawhi or no Kawhi. So I tend to believe, I cannot buy for a second that anyone, even Houston, is going to beat Golden State in a 7-game series. You have to beat them 4 times. Can you beat them once? Yes. Can you beat them twice? Maybe. 4 times? No way in hell. I just don't buy it. They're just too good. So, yeah, I do think it's all a foregone conclusion. I think the drama could be, does someone get injured? I mean, all these injuries that have been happening, what if you get to the playoffs and Durant or Steph Curry goes down or Harden goes down? All of a sudden, things change in a hurry. So I think there's definitely that to not hope for necessarily, but you want to play hard and be in position in case that does happen. But I think right now everyone's playing for the just just a chance to win in the first round and then get whacked in the second.
Let's get to Oregon hoops. You know, they had those gut punch losses to the L.A. schools. They had no room for error, swept the Arizona schools. And, you know, they got tonight, Seattle on Saturday, the conference tournament. Beyond winning the Pac-12 tournament, how would you gauge their shot or what they need to do to get in at least the at-large picture?
You know, I was thinking going into the weekend that if they swept Arizona schools and swept Washington and got to the final of the Pac-12 tournament, that maybe that would be enough to push them through the bubble. But Richard Lucas made a great point last night. He's like, you know, he broke down Oklahoma State, that's 17-13, but has like five wins against ranked teams, one of them being Kansas. So, like, there's an inconsistent team with way better resume than Oregon. Oregon has two wins, I think, over ranked teams.
Yep.
Arizona State is no longer ranked, so actually over existing ranked teams, it's just Arizona. If they were to beat Arizona in the tournament, in the semis or something like that, maybe that gives them hope. But I think right now that they have to win the Pac-12 tournament to get in.
All right, continue with Aaron Fentress of NBC Sports Northwest. I see you guys talk with friend of our program, Austin Meek, about the women's program. Just two seniors. They went to the Elite Eight. They won the Pac-12. They got big contributors coming in. I guess my question is, if it was available, if they went with an IPO, how would you have liked to purchase stock in the Oregon's women's program about a year ago?
Yeah, no kidding. They're humming. And last year, weren't they like 8-10 in conference last year? But they had the tournament, right?
Yep, they were sub-500 in league.
Yeah, and they went to the Elite Eight and lost to, I can't remember who they
UConn.
Lost. UConn, of course. How could I forget that? What's interesting about them right now, though, is that whole Stanford question. You know, Stanford's beaten them. They beat them three times last year, including the semis in the Pac-12 Women's Tournament, and they beat them already this year. And so you wonder, can they get over that hump against Stanford if they come across them in the Pac-12 tournament? But yeah, they're doing great things, and they're still relatively young, so I think they're going to be back in the hunt next year. But you know what? Sabrina, can you say her last name before? I don't want to butcher it.
Ionescu.
Sabrina Ionescu. You know what? I think she's a little overrated.
Oh, wow. Hot take.
hear me out on this, all right? She's averaging, what, 19-8-7 or something like that, 19-9-8. Most triple doubles. Yeah. She leads the team in steals with like 44 or what have you. But she only has 10 block shots. What's her problem? Oh, she's too good to block a shot? Come on. Player of the year, my butt. Of course, I'm just joking.
Nice.
I don't know if sports women fans drove up the side of the road when I started saying that. But no, she is phenomenal. Listen, I'm a sucker for the all around player. That's why Magic remains my favorite player of all time, because the ability to score and dish, you know, at the same time, to me is my most beloved trait. And the fact that she is so well rounded is very amazing to watch. So good for her.
No, and not only that, but she also, what I always say, she plays with an unbridled joy. She just loves playing that game. I want to get to some NFL, and I know if you probably recovered from the end of the Mike Glennon era, but this...
Wait, what are you talking about? Did they release him?
Yeah. They called it... They called it the end of an era. And one win, 140 passes, he'll pocket $18.5 million. I want
great
that
work
job.
If you can get it. Great work if you can get it.
So this proposal from the competition committee to change the pass interference rule, you know, from the spot of foul, you know, you throw it up there, a guy makes a bad call, it's a 60-yard penalty, to a more college-like, you know, PIs 15, automatic first down. What do you think of that?
Wait, run that by me again?
The competition committee has suggested pass interference in the NFL no longer where the infraction is committed. You know, 45, 50 yards downfield.
More
college-like, automatic first down, 15 yards. I've been going back and forth on this. Right off the top of your head, what do you think about that?
Well, my biggest concern with that rule is that it almost makes it advantageous to interfere then. If you think you're beat and you can reach out and, like, grab the guy last second or do something, anything to avoid the completion, because it's only 15 yards. At the same time, sometimes there are marginal calls that's like, oh, come on, that was kind of ticky-tack, and you get, like, 45 yards out of it.
Yep.
As opposed to maybe 15. I would say leave it the way it is. What I don't like, here's what I don't like, and this comes to more, this leads to more judgment calls. I don't like it when clearly the guy's well covered and the quarterback just throws it up and hopes for something, and then there's some incidental contact in his PI. Just because, like, the DB has to turn around and make a play on the ball.
Right.
And then bumps into the, you know what I mean? It's like he had great coverage, but the guy threw it up and he just happened to bump him, but it was going to take, like, a miraculous play by the receiver to get to it. I hate that. But that becomes, you know, judgment as well. You know, it's that judgment that muddies things up a little bit, which we've seen with the catches and reception calls. So I'm going to say, though, leave it the way it is.
All right. Yesterday we learned Carolina released Jonathan Stewart. So we ran a list. Duck running backs who played running back in the NFL. And we got down to two guys. Stewart. 7,300 rush yards, 8,600 from scrimmage, one Super Bowl appearance. LeGarrette Blount, almost 6,000 rush yards, just won his third Super Bowl, the top two by the numbers easily. And then we played the, who's had a better NFL career? What do you think about that?
Yeah, as sad as it is, I would have to go with Blount. Just, I mean, the yards are close, and he's got the three Super Bowl wins. You know, I mean, if I had to pick a career, you know, I mean, for stability and longevity and, you know, being an all-around great guy, you know, you go with Jay Stu.
Right.
But if I had to pick a career, if you told me 6,000 yards or 7,000 yards, and I get 6,000 yards, I lose 1,000 yards, I get three Super Bowl wins, you get to play with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and then go to the Eagles and beat Tom Brady and Bill Belichick? I think I'm taking that.
Yeah, and he's on kind of a good roll here. It's not only three, but three of the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And he's not done.
He's a goat.
The Duck Goat as a running back in the NFL.
I think he and Emmitt must be the only two running backs with three Super Bowls in 4 years.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody's won three in 4 years. So there you go. Let's close with this. With this whole college basketball mess, we heard the update from Sean Miller today. And, you know, I don't think of the million times you and I talked, we've ever chatted about player compensation beyond the obvious. Tuition, room and board, nutrition, great coaching, not to be taken for granted. But for what's at stake, be it getting a cut of merchandising, what's been your opinion on this? Have you stuck with it all along, or is it one of these ever-evolving?
Yeah, I'm all over the map. So I've always believed that the scholarship has been devalued too much, and we need to teach kids to value the scholarship and to take advantage of the scholarship. There's too many kids, you know, I think, just think about the NFL. And it's okay if you're going to be a top 10 pick. That's great. You know, I guess it's going to work out for you. But the problem is you have 10 picks every year in the top 10, but you have like 50 guys who think they're going to be top 10 picks. One thing I think that I would do if I were around the galaxy, which I should be, is you guarantee scholarship. You sign a guy to a scholarship. I don't care if he leaves early or not. He can come back and finish his degree, because I hate the fact that guys leave for whatever reason, and then they have to come back and pay for it.
Huh.
Although Ed O'Bannon told us, we had him on a couple weeks ago, and he said that after he left early, he actually went back to UCLA to finish his degree, and they let him go for free back on scholarship. So I think that way you're guaranteeing an education for kids. So if he does something dumb at 19, 20 and leaves early, and it doesn't work out, if he were that good to even think about that, he helped your program immensely, helped you make a lot of money. Let him come back to finish his degree. But I think that at this point, there's just so much money involved. It's not like the olden times 20 years ago when, you know, coaches might have been making 500, 600, 700 grand. You got coaches making $2, $3, $4, $5 million in college football, $6, $8, $10 million. That you have to start figuring out a way to where the best players can get a piece of that. And I'm not sure how you do it, but it's unfair. It's just flat out is unfair that a coach is going to make $2, $3 million a year from his university, do a shoe deal, and the kid who's going to make him that money as a player is not getting anything beyond the scholarship. It's just not right. And if I were DeAndre Ayton, and someone offered me $100 grand, I'm taking it. And I do not, people out there who blame the kid at all, go get bent. Because the kids do not have representation at the table when they negotiate any of these deals. And if I were a guaranteed top 10 pick and someone told me I had to go play college basketball somewhere for 1 year and the team came up to me and said, we'll give you 250 grand to come play for us, I am taking that money in a nanosecond. And if I get caught and I get busted, what are you going to do to me? Not let me play in college where I don't want to play anyway? Boo freaking who? Then I'm going to wait and go to the NBA. So I don't blame the kids at all. Here's my number one solution. Let the agents who are going to know who the best players are pay them in advance to give them that money, to sign them early so when they come out, you already have them hooked in, into your agency. And then that way the agents are taking care of it and not the college coaches.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you had this conversation with me 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago. Now I'm like a different person. I really see where you're coming from. All right, Mr. Fentress, good stuff. Catch all he's up to. I got to be off in an hour and a half. I can't list the whole thing. Start with NBC Sports Northwest. You have an enjoyable weekend, and we'll catch up next week as March Madness gets closer.
Oh, awesome. Sounds good, man. Take care.
All right, take care, Aaron.